You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Fat Tony. How you doing, Fat?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Man, I appreciate you being on the show. I love the name. It's funny, Jessica made the introduction to us, and I was just thinking to myself, what in the world does a guy that's called Fat Tony looks like? And I jumped online and did a little due diligence, and you're anything but a Fat Tony.
Exactly.
Like Mr. Yeah, Fitness.
Totally. I guess it's kind of like calling the big guy tiny or something.
I
was in ninth grade, my friends just thought it'd be funny to give me a Tough Mafia name because I was a dorky white kid with a dorky white kid name. So they came up with that, and it's stuck ever since.
Man, so this just goes back to high school. So that you've carried Fat
more
Tony
than half
for a
my
long
life
time.
Now. Totally. I was 15 and now I'm 32. So it's literally been more than half my life.
Hilarious. So, and you are a jack of all trades. I mean, you've got a cool name, but in addition to that, you've got a podcast, which is the Expansion Project Podcast. You're a full-time professional photographer. You've got a great new website out there called Break Parallel, which is like a functional fitness lifestyle type website, which is very cool. But you're also, in addition to that, which is why you're on the show, you're a real estate investor.
Yeah, I definitely have a lot going on. I think, I don't know if it's ADD or just me kind of always wanting to forge my own path or, you know, my rebellious nature, but I've never been one to like kind of just stick with one thing and just stay there, you know?
No doubt, man. You're keeping it fresh and interesting. And yeah, I completely get that. I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably have that tendency to want to have their hands in a lot of different things. I totally get that.
Yeah, for sure. I started out, you know, with a full-time job right out of college, which was, I worked as a photographer and online editor for a BMX bike riding magazine.
Huh.
And I did that for about 5.5 years. And the whole time I was always like doing stuff on the side, coming up with side projects, partly for financial reasons, because I knew that I wanted to invest in stuff. And I knew that my small salary wasn't really going to get me there as quickly as I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Also partly just because I have a hard time just doing one thing. And when I see other opportunities, it's hard for me to not want to jump on them.
You know, that could be, it's funny because I'm the same way, and it could be good or bad. I feel like my first couple years in business, I learned early on, okay, Kent, you can't chase everything. You got to, you know, not have the squirrel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know, if there's a good opportunity, pursue it, but sometimes, you know, keep your head down and focus on one thing and do it really well. But it sounds like you're doing a couple of things really well.
Yeah, I would like to think so. I hope other people think that way.
So you came out of school, you took a 5-year job.
Yep.
Full time. And then, so how did you make that sort of entry into the world of being an entrepreneur?
Well, like I said, I just was always looking for the next thing. And I felt like with that job that I got out of it what I wanted. And one of the big things that really affected me during that job is I was literally getting paid to travel around the world to hang out with professional BMX riders and take pictures of them and film videos of them. And all these dudes were making a living doing what they loved, and they didn't have to go to an office every day. And although while I was out shooting, I was kind of in that same boat with them, and it felt a little bit similar, there was a lot of times when I wasn't out shooting that I was in the cubicle back of the office and making that commute every day. And so I got in a taste of that, you know, traveling, free, nomad lifestyle, and just this, you know, carefree attitude. And I just couldn't shake it. So once I felt that it was the right time, you know, I went ahead and jumped ship and got out of there and started pursuing my own thing.
So what did that look like for you? You were obviously had some experience in that world of BMX and professional photography. What was sort of your first big venture by yourself?
I got very lucky right out of college. And I say luck, but I also put in a shitload of work to get to that point and to put myself into that position where I could build relationships with just about every brand and rider in the industry. So by the time I left, I was a pretty well-known name in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty tight-knit and niche world, you know?
Sure.
So once I left, I literally turned in my gear and you know, handed over my computer to the company. And 2 days later, I left for a month of traveling around Asia just to kind of hit the reset button.
Sure.
And I honestly didn't have a plan of when I got back, like what my life was going to look like. I just knew that I was going to try to shoot photos and film videos for whoever was going to pay me. And while I was in Asia, and I was in Thailand specifically for several weeks, I got a handful of emails of people basically handing me work. And one of those was like a reoccurring gig that lasted for about a year and a half. That was just real steady income. The other two were, you know, other people that hired me a few times here and there. But like I said, I left with no clear plan and no money lined up. And these jobs just started falling into place. And that stayed steady for about 2.5 to 3 years, which was incredible. And then over that time, I also discovered CrossFit. And I was one of those that, if anybody out there listening has tried CrossFit or heard much about it, people talk about kind of drinking the Kool-Aid and just getting addicted to this sport and this, you know, lifestyle and this workout modality. And that's what happened to me. So eventually I kind of transitioned from, you know, my childhood passion of BMX riding to transitioning to my new passion, which is CrossFit and functional fitness. So now I'm doing much, much less work in the BMX world, and I'm doing a lot of work in the functional fitness community.
Interesting. Are you not? Did you by chance open like your own gym, or are you just?
No, I did not. I'm just still shooting photos and videos and stuff. So my whole thing, and this kind of ties a lot into my real estate investing too, is that I've just always wanted to do what made me happy and what I was passionate about. You know, I grew up riding BMX bikes and turned that into a career, not of me on my bike, but, you know, something involved in that industry that I was really, really cared about. And obviously I was always interested in photography and video and everything as well. So I just kind of mashed those two together. And then now that I've taken on this CrossFit thing and just am super into the fitness, it just made sense for me to transition my skills of everything I've learned over the years and keep doing that just in a different industry. And so how that ties into the real estate type thing is that even while I'm investing, and obviously we'll talk about this a little bit more, while I'm investing, I still really focus on doing what makes me happy and doing what I love outside of the investing. So, you know, my career path is one way and my investing is on the side, and it's on the side so that I can keep my focus of what makes me happy.
Yep. Well, you know, I was really thrilled to have you on too, because a lot of our guests are full-time real estate investors.
Yep.
But I really like bringing on guys that are full-time in something that they love, but still find an opportunity to invest in real estate. And, you know, it's okay if real estate's not your number one passion. It's not for most people. You know, if your number one passion's, you know, photography or BMX or CrossFit, that's amazing that you've been able to plug in and make that your full-time gig, yet still invest on the side.
Right. And for me, I'm very focus oriented. So for whatever I'm focused on at that time becomes kind of all encompassing. And I think that's just a certain way that I'm wired personally. Mm-hmm. And there's times when, you know, business is going to be my number one focus and I'm killing it on that front. And then there's times when, you know, maybe I'm, you know, have a little bit of gigs lined up and I don't need to focus so much on my business. And then that's when I'm focused more on my training and I'm spending more time in the gym and I'm, you know, making all these gains and hitting all these PRs. And then there's times when, you know, real estate's going to be my focus and everything else in my life is kind of in a place where I feel like I can shift my focus a little bit. And that's when I hone in on the investing side of things. And that's when I'll get my next property, you know?
Yep. Well, it's awesome that you've sort of been able to carve out this life for yourself where you're doing what you want, you know, and not worried about, you know, making the biggest check possible. You're doing what fulfills you, which is very cool.
Right.
So what do you, so currently you've obviously got your hands in a couple different things. What would you say your current occupation is?
Well, I guess what pays the bills is photography and video production.
Gotcha.
But like you mentioned before, I just recently started a new functional fitness lifestyle website. It's called breakparallel.com. And my plan is to turn that into, you know, my and my business partner's full-time business. So I've got a goal there, you know, within 2 years to be on a full-time salary with that company. Right now, I haven't made a single penny. You know, we've invested a little bit of money. We got our first couple of advertiser checks on their way. You know, we've only been launched 3 months now. So to even have an advertiser or a couple of them on the way at this point is pretty exciting.
Absolutely.
But all that money is just going to go right back into the business to invest in it and build it up even more, you know?
Yep.
So right now, yeah, photography is paying the bills, but I'm really trying to get this next business off the ground. And once that is more running itself and less of me hands on every day, and actually bringing in some income, then I'm for sure going to, you know, focus on investing a little bit more.
Yep. So you've been a real estate investor now for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. How did that entry point in real estate investing happen for you?
So it's hard for me to talk about it without telling a little bit of a backstory. So hopefully I have time for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I moved from a small town in Louisiana to Southern California when I graduated college to get that full-time job with the BMX magazine. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I remember just looking at, I was at a car wash, and I vividly remember looking at one of these little, you know, newsprint type publications that's sitting out of the car wash at the homes in the area. And I'm just looking at these prices, and coming from a small town in Louisiana, the prices just seemed outrageous. You know, I couldn't believe that there was houses for this much money. And I just remember scratching my head, and I had a very small town mindset at that point of just like, how the hell do people afford houses in this area? Like, this is impossible. This is never going to happen. And it wasn't too long after that I had a big mental shift after talking to some friends and reading a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. And my mental shift literally went from, how the hell do you do this, to, okay, how do you do this? If other people do it, there's a way to do it, and I've got to figure out how to do it. So my first big move in that direction was, like I said, kind of picking up those freelance jobs on the side of my full-time job and figuring out what steps it's going to take for me to get into a home. And at the time, I thought I was going to get a duplex or a triplex or something, and that would kind of be my first, you know, investment-type vehicle. And even with all the side jobs that I was doing and my full-time salary, I still wasn't able to get quite enough money, in the bank to put a down payment on a property that big. So I worked hard for about 2 years or so, just building up my liquid and saving and saving and saving and keeping low overhead and just kind of staying on a college budget, even though I was out of college basically. And that's when I got my condo that I still currently live in. You know, it's a great place. I got it on a short sale, so that was a good learning experience. And the real estate agent that I was working with at the time was a friend of mine. He was kind of new to the real estate game, so we were kind of learning the ropes together. And he almost acted like a bit of a mentor and a teacher for me throughout that process of finding my condo. So that was super helpful.
And the condo's there in Southern California?
Yep. Yeah, it's a great place, man. It's a two-bedroom, two-bath, 3 blocks from the beach in downtown Long Beach. And like I said, it was a short sale. I got it in 2010, nice. You know, right at the perfect time. In 2006, this same place that I'm sitting in right now sold for $360,000 or $350,000, and I got it for $180,000.
Holy cow. I didn't realize that was possible.
Yeah.
In Southern California.
I know. I got a great deal, and now the value has gone way up, and it's probably closer to $300,000 again now. So I'm sitting on a lot of equity in it, which is great. Even though I won't talk about this one later on, this actually might be my best deal yet, is the one I'm sitting in.
That's right. Well, that's the thing about Southern California, or even California in general, Bay Area or Southern California, it seems like you're either buying on the way up or the way down. There's not much in between. It's either screaming hot or just dropping fast, and you happen to buy on the way up, it sounds like.
Totally. Yeah. So from there, my next move was basically just to get my liquid built back up. You know, I moved into this place, and then it was like, all right, well, I've already proven to myself that I can save money on this salary. So I got a roommate that was already living with me in an apartment to just move over into the condo with me. So he was, you know, paying more than half my mortgage. So my expenses stayed about the same when I got this place, which was great.
Awesome.
That allowed me to keep saving money.
Yep.
And from there, it was, you know, okay, I don't think realistically a place in California where I live is going to work out, because looking at the numbers, you know, I would have had to save a ridiculous amount for a down payment, and it probably would have had to been way over 20% of a down payment to make the numbers work out to where I could cash flow anything and make a rental place work out here.
Yep.
So I had a few friends that were investing, and they are the ones that kind of turned me on to investing out of state. Like I said, I didn't really think that investing in California was going to be reasonable at that time. And it just didn't seem like the smartest thing to do with my funds being so low. Like I said, I had a full-time job that didn't have a big salary. And I'll just go ahead and throw it out there. At the time, I was making probably like $34,000 a year living in Southern California.
Wow.
And I was making a decent amount on the side on top of that. And I don't mind sharing my numbers or anything, because I think it's important for people to hear what's possible.
Sure.
So in addition to the $34,000, I was making probably $20,000 to $30,000 in freelance income on my good years.
Mm-hmm.
So I by no means had a big salary, and there was no way I was going to save up, you know, $100,000 for a down payment on a place in California or something.
Mm-hmm.
That just wasn't in the cards. So what happened was, I had a friend of mine that lived in Saginaw, Michigan, and you know, the housing market over there had just tanked super hard. And he was doing construction and was able to buy houses from anywhere from like $500 to like $5,000. And basically he would, you know, put a couple weeks worth of work into them and basically rehab these houses himself, like with a one man crew, and then get a render in there. So a friend of mine who had more capital than I did saw what he was doing and was like, man, that sounds like a good idea. I'll buy a place in Michigan. So kind of with this other guy's help, my one friend in Louisiana bought a place in Michigan. He didn't buy the $5,000 model. He bought like a $25,000 one that he wouldn't have to put work into, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of saw how it worked from them doing it. And then I was like, all right, well, that makes sense. Like, I'll be able to buy a place in Michigan too. However, the real estate agent that I was trying to go through ended up not working out so well. And she was just very, really bad at communicating with me and just made me didn't, she didn't make me feel very comfortable or secure with what was going on.
That's
and
very
I
important.
Just felt like, okay, if my eyes and ears on the ground over there doesn't seem to be doing what I want them to, like now I'm a little bit worried and I want to move away from there. So I parted ways with that agent and I was kind of like going back to the drawing board, you know? And because I didn't know anything about Michigan myself, it was kind of like I was just nervous to do cold calling and I just didn't feel comfortable doing anything over there yet. So what I did was I went to a place out of state where my one friend that had bought the house in Michigan, he lived in a small town in Louisiana near where I grew up, and it's also near where my parents live. It's a place that I visit a couple times a year, and he's a really good friend of mine, and he had become friends with the property manager that he's been working with. So at that point, I felt like, okay, I'm more familiar with the area. I've got eyes and ears on the ground over there. Now I feel comfortable with an area. At this point, I still had to cold call to find a real estate agent. But it didn't take a lot of calls. I mean, maybe 3 phone calls to find somebody that I felt comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And that's a process that has gotten easier for me for sure. But, you know, I called this lady and I was like, you know, I'm looking for somebody that has sold houses to people out of state and, you know, understands the rental property market and blah, 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 and kind of told her exactly what I was looking for. And she fit the bill. So I want to say she showed me, you know, via email about 10 properties and I ended up buying one of them. I never went there to see it first or anything. I just trusted her and I trusted my friend that went and looked at the place. And I trusted the property manager that I knew that I was going to have looking after the place. I had him go look at it and basically tell me yes or no. The only thing I care about is the property manager that's taking care of it, is he going to be able to put a tenant in there? And does he feel comfortable going down that street to check on it and to take care of things and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be the one doing it. So that was the first place that I bought, and that one closed October of 2011.
And what market was that again?
So that is Hammond, Louisiana, which is a college town. There's a college there called SLU, Southeastern Louisiana University, I believe it is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's a town that after Hurricane Katrina, a lot of people moved from New Orleans and other what they call flood zones to this place because there's a lot less flood zones here, meaning that if there's another hurricane or a big rainstorm or whatever, you're not required to have flood insurance because it's not an area that is so below sea level that is really prone to these floods like they had.
So what was your price point on this first house?
So this one was $63,500. Okay. It was a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath. One of the things I liked about it was that it was pretty big. I don't have the square footage in front of me. I should have pulled that up. But I want to say it was around 1,300 square feet or so. So it was a good size. And it was built in 1991. So it was a little bit newer as well.
Yeah.
So I was able to put 20% down on it, which was only $12,700. And I kind of got lucky because as I was getting the financing for it, they were telling me that, you know, if it was a rental, I was going to have to get a commercial loan. It would be a 20-year instead of 30-year. It'd have a higher interest rate. But there's a little bit of a loophole that they basically just kind of shot out over the phone and was like, you know, if this is considered a second residence, we can do a traditional mortgage on it with a lower interest rate. And then later on, if you decide that you're not really going to live in the second residence that much and you want to rent it out, then that wouldn't be a problem either. And I was like, sweet, it's a second residence. And they're like, all right, here we go. You can do a 30-year mortgage.
We'll keep that a secret. I won't tell anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So of course I never planned on living in it or anything. And, you know, didn't even go see it before I bought it or whatever. But I was able to get 4.875% mortgage at a 30-year fixed rate.
And so what kind of income do both sides bring in?
So right now it's renting for about $750.
Okay.
And I think that's pretty good for that area. And, you know, the mortgage is, you know, like $400 or whatever it is.
Yep.
I do have another property in that area, so it's hard to say like how much it actually cash flows. And right now it's probably be about broken even, because there was a few months in the very beginning that it went unrented. They had, you know, some repairs to be made and stuff. And then over time I bought another property in that same area. So now on my spreadsheet, when I'm looking at the numbers, both properties are on the same sheet, because the property manager kind of takes care of all the finances on one invoice basically.
Yep.
So right now it's probably about broken even, you know. It hasn't really increased my bank account much from that property's cash flow, but obviously the property's gained value and the equity has gone up by paying off the mortgage with it and everything.
Absolutely.
So I'm not losing money by any means on it. It's definitely paying for itself and it's making some money and the equity is going up.
Yeah, I mean, buying a rental, I mean, people need to understand that it's a long-term endeavor. I mean, let that sucker just pay down the principal, let it appreciate, even if it's slowly. But 10 years, 15 years from now, you're going to wake up and have, you know, 50, 60, 70 grand in equity in one of these things.
Exactly. You know, and that's the way I'm looking at it. You know, and I tell people that all the time, like, you know, when you buy stocks and mutual funds and you do stuff in the market, you don't look at it every day and you don't check, you know, how much you made each month or whatever. It's a long-term play, and that's what real estate is. And, you know, when you get a 30-year mortgage, you can't expect to make money on year number two and, you know, just be rolling in the dough, you know? Yeah,
right. Absolutely. So you kind of figured out sort of a method for finding out-of-state properties. I mean, obviously, I think the key to that one sounds like just having a friend and a good property manager there to have some eyes on the ground and not just trust a, you know, random real estate agent. They're checking it out for you, making sure it is a good buy.
Well, that
huge.
Was the key for that first one. It helped get my mindset in the place where I basically felt like, this isn't that hard. Like, what's the big deal, you know?
Yeah.
And once I saw it in motion through the first one, it made it a lot easier to then go back to Michigan and get something cheaper. So my next deal, because I had left my full-time job and I didn't have the full-time salary anymore, I was basically in a place where I couldn't really get a loan again.
Right.
Because I had the mortgage on the one property in Louisiana, the mortgage on my condo in California, and no secured income. And it just wasn't happening for a loan.
Yep.
So my next move was to just save up more cash and then buy one of the places free and clearing cash in Michigan. And for that one, like I said, the real estate agent, I wasn't happy with her. So that's when I started doing the cold calls again. And, you know, I could have done this the first time, but I hadn't ever done it before, so I was just nervous and I was scared, I guess, and I just didn't know what it was going to look and feel like. So once my kind of mindset got conditioned through the property in Louisiana and through that deal, then I was able to pick up the phone again. And I honestly think it might have been the very first agent that I called. I'm pretty sure it was within the three, and it might have been the first one. You know, I had a list of questions written down so I didn't forget them. And I just went down the list, you know, have you sold out-of-state investors? Do you own real estate yourself and rental properties of your own? You know, do you understand this? Like, can you do X, Y, and Z for me? Can you refer me to, you know, a home inspector? And do you mind going to the home inspection on my behalf? And, you know, are you going to be able to refer me to a property manager and all these things? So this guy said, yes, 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 I can take care of all that. You know, he had rental properties of his own, so he understood where I was coming from. And I was like, all right, cool. Show me some properties. And, I think he literally sent me between 3 and 5 properties, and I ended up buying just one of those. It was like, you know, there's deals everywhere you look, so why am I going to spend months and months dwelling over things that, you know, might make a couple dollars more or less here or there, you know? Like, they're all deals, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm never going to go there, I've still never been to Saginaw. I've still never seen the place in person since I bought it, you know, a couple years ago. So if I'm never even going to be there or see it, like, what do I care, you know?
As long as you know. Yeah, and you had some friends, too, that sounded like that had bought there and had done all right. So you sort of had
exactly.
The benefit of their experience, too.
Totally, totally. But that one was a 3-unit that, at the time, they were already filled with tenants.
Nice.
All those tenants didn't necessarily stay there for all that long, but it was already rented out, and the 3-unit only cost $19,000.
Wow. So
I was able to close quickly, didn't have to have a loan. And it just seemed like a no-brainer at that point.
Yeah. How's it performed for you so far?
It's been good. It's been an interesting ride, you know, and it is a long-term play. And hopefully the market over there goes back up to where, you know, it can appreciate in value at some point. I'm not super hopeful that it's going to, you know, get anywhere close to California rates or anything, or maybe even Louisiana. But it's been good, with the exception of, you know, big expenses like the air conditioning going out.
Yeah.
There's always things like that. And one thing, you know, I'd like to point out to other people listening to this that are thinking about this is there's a handful of questions and, you know, things that I didn't really think about at the time. Just like I mentioned flood zones in Louisiana, if you're not from there, that's probably something you're not going to think about. Well, I've never lived in a place where it snows, so how often does this come up, and why do I have to pay for this? But because it's a three unit, you can't expect your tenants, you know, to all three divvy up like who's going to do it each week when it snows, you know?
Oh my gosh.
So there were expenses like that that popped up.
Yeah. Just snow removal. You don't even think about that in Georgia, especially not in Southern California.
Exactly.
Interesting. And so yeah. What sort of rent are you getting? I'm just curious on.
Yeah. So that one, like I said, is three units. And currently, thankfully, we just got all three rented out through Section 8 under a 1 year lease. So I believe one's at $550, one's at $450, and one's at $400.
That's insane cash flow if you think about what your investment is.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course, they do have the expenses. I have to pay the electric and gas bill because it's on 1 meter. Because it was a single house that got converted mm-hmm. a long time ago. So they didn't convert the electric or the gas into three units. So during the winter months, that can get pricey, you know, when you've got to turn up the furnace and everything. Again, the furnace did go out, so that was a big expense. Obviously, the management fees and the snow shovel and everything. So it's still turning to cash flow for sure. And then, of course, there was times when, you know, the tenants left and we had to do some repairs and everything. And because the new tenants we got in were Section 8, there were certain repairs that the government agencies came in and, you know, went through their checklist and said these things need to be done before we can sign off on this or whatever. So it went through a little bit of a rough patch, but as of about a month or 2 months ago, I'm getting the Section 8 checks in and stuff. And so I think the cash flow is going to be much, much better now that those are on schedule.
Man, that's killer. So you've been at this now about 4 years. You've bought a handful of houses out of state. You've had definitely gotten an education, it sounds like. But is there any of the houses that you've bought so far that kind of stands out to you as like your best deal ever?
Yeah, I would say that first one for sure. So the only other one that I have that we didn't mention yet is another single family in Hammond, Louisiana manager that's been taking care of my stuff down there. He was able to act as the real estate agent, and he knew the tenant already that was there, and he knew that the owners just wanted to get rid of it and the tenant wanted to stay there and stuff. So that was a cool way to go about that property. So I've only had that one for probably right at about a year now or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to say like how it's going to perform in the long term. And that one had an air conditioner that went out. That was, you know, $4,000 right off the top there. So I would say to date, my best deal is that first single family that I bought in Louisiana. Part of the reason why, like I told you, I was able to get that 30-year fixed mortgage, whereas on the other one that I more recently bought, it was a 20-year mortgage with a little bit higher interest rate. And then also, in the beginning of that first property, the property manager really helped me out. You know, I had a list of things that I wanted to have done based off of what the home inspector told me, you know, he recommended, and based off of what I felt comfortable with. And of course, based off of what the property manager felt like needed to be done before it was rented out. So I had a list of all these things that had to be done, and it was probably $2,500 worth of repairs or so. And the property manager, you know, got his guys over there, took care of everything with me still being out of state. And then he didn't even make me pay for it up front.
Nice. Yeah,
and then the place didn't even get rented out for probably 4 or 5 months. And I'm not sure why that happened at that point, because ever since then, anytime a tenant moves out, one moves right back in. And it's been a very steady, you know, low vacancy rate. But for those first 5 months or so, like I said, he had paid for all these repairs and didn't make me pay. And he just started taking the money out once the rent income started coming in. So, you know, the check for $700 would come in and he would take it off the top and, you know, just show me the balance of what was left and how much I had left to pay off.
Yeah.
So I never had to take that money out of pocket, which was amazing. And that helped that deal to be really good.
And being in a college town too, are you able to rent to college kids or just regular families?
It's more regular families. In the neighborhood, it's a little bit further away from the college, and it's probably in a neighborhood that just caters more towards a different lifestyle and a different, you know, social class of people.
Yep.
With that said, I feel like I'm beating around the bush a little bit. It's a little bit lower income. I'm not going to say ghetto exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a place I wouldn't necessarily want to live in. And I think a lot of college kids probably would want to stay away from there too.
Although, you know, $750 in rent income is a lot better than like your triplex in Saginaw at $550 and $450 a month. There's a big leap in probably tenant quality from one to the next.
For sure. And you know, when I was in college, I would have loved that house. That house is three times as nice as the house I lived in college. But again, it's just the neighborhood and the type of people that it attracts and stuff.
Yeah, I gotcha. But still, yeah, absolutely. Being your first deal out of state, I mean, you bought it at a great price. You're getting good cash flow on it. I mean, absolutely. That's a killer deal. And if you hold that thing for the next 15, 20, 30 years, I mean, it's gonna do really well for you, I'd imagine.
For sure. And like I mentioned, the purchase price was $63,500. It's probably right now closer to appraising at 80,000.
Oh, nice. So yeah, you've already gotten 17 grand in appreciation. You probably paid it down a few thousand. Probably 20 grand in equity already after just a couple of years. Killer. That's a, you know, and I'm not sure if you realize this, but what we actually at Georgia Residential Partners, which is my primary business, that's sort of what we specialize in, is selling to out-of-state investors. And the majority of my investors actually come from Southern California for the exact same reasons you mentioned. You can't get good cash flowing properties in Southern California or Northern California. And you look somewhere else like Louisiana or Michigan or Atlanta in our case, and there's just so many more opportunities to get, you know, cheaper houses that cash flow really well.
Yeah, for sure. So my next move is kind of on hold right now. Like I said, I'm starting up this new website business and I don't have a full-time job. So the loan situation and the liquid capital situation right now are looking at a few different options and stuff, but not putting that as my primary focus right now until everything else is a little bit more in order and stuff.
Sure. Yep. But you know what? You're like a lot of guys out there who, you know, want to accumulate a house here and a house there, maybe one every year or one every other year. And it's the slow, steady, long-term strategy, I think, that's going to do really well for you over time.
For sure. And hopefully the business takes off and the income, ramps up and I can start doing much more per year. I would
Absolutely.
love to be able to do that more per year, but again, it's not worth it to me to go sit in a cubicle and make six figures in order to get that done. I would rather, build the business that I want because I'm passionate about it and, be able to travel and do the things that make me happy while I'm reaching those long-term goals.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I want to just make note of that I think really stuck out to me in the interview is just the fact that to get your first house, you put your head down and really focused on saving money. And because you had an end game in mind, which was to buy a condo or a house or whatever. And it took discipline on your part and even a long-term strategy. Okay, I'm going to live really simply so I can put money away. And now look at that condo you bought. You bought it for 180 and it's worth almost probably twice as much as what you paid for it just because you had the discipline to save for it.
For sure.
That's awesome. Well, Fat Man, I appreciate you coming on the show. This is really inspirational, especially for guys that are, doing what they want to do, maybe sacrificing some income to do that and still finding a way to invest in real estate. It's a great story.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you letting me share it.
And now, where could we steer people to if they are interested in finding out more about your photography business or about your functional fitness lifestyle website? Where would we send them?
Well, we already mentioned I got a lot of things, so I'll try to go through them quick. My personal website with my photos and everything is just fattonybmx.com. And my social networks are all in the same thing. I'm pretty active on Instagram, and that's just at fattonybmx. Same on Twitter and Facebook. And then definitely check out my podcast. There's a lot of really inspirational stories on there. I've got some investors on there, musicians, authors, professional athletes, and all kinds of really interesting people. So if anybody out there is looking for some inspiration, can download the Expansion Project on iTunes, Stitcher, and all that stuff. And then, yeah, if anybody's into a functional fitness or CrossFit, they can go check out breakparallel.com and Break Parallels on Instagram and everything as well.
Awesome. I'll make sure we put all this stuff up in the show notes for you guys. Fat, thanks again for coming on the show. This is great.
Thank you, man. Have a
All
good
right.
one.
Talk to you soon. Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you that the name of this podcast is Deal Farm for a reason, because I want to help you do more real estate deals. If you're looking to buy a deal in a certain market, let me know about it. I've got contacts all around the country. If you're just looking for hard money or private lending, I do a lot of private lending and would be more than happy to work with you. If you're looking to partner on a deal, maybe it's your first deal or second deal and you need a little help, I partner with people all the time. Whatever it is you're looking for to fill in the gap to get started in real estate investing, I can probably help. And if I can't, I'll point you in the right direction. Again, I'm here to help you become successful in real estate. Go to our website, dealfarm.net, onto the Contact Us page. That'll go directly to my inbox. I will reach back out to you, set up a time to talk, and I'll do whatever I can to make you a success. Thanks again for listening to The Deal Farm. We will see you on the next episode. Take care.